Well. Good evening, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio. And what is on your mind? What is on your thoughts? My apology for not getting to everyone today. We had some lengthy conversations, and I don't want anyone to feel left in the lurch or left behind. I don't want to leave anybody with the aching blue nuggets of philosophical incompletion. So I am here for you. And I am eager and thrilled and happy and willing to answer your questions. Just remember, of course, I ain't doing politics no more. It's not exactly the realm of argument now, it's the realm of power. And it is not an appropriate place for a reasoner, for me, at least at the moment. So if you have questions, challenges, issues, problems, I'm absolutely thrilled if you would poke them into my brain and see what we can summon up in response. And just as we await, of course, people who want to talk, I did want to say that one of the things that's kind of terrible that happens in the world these days, and it always has, I think it seems to be more vivid these days, is this idea that you cannot act until the world is perfect. People say, in the manosphere, right? And they've been saying it to me. I understand, I sympathize. Well, Steph, we've got to reform the family courts, and we've got to get rid of the welfare state, and we got to do this. Listen, you could not preach to a more willing and enthusiastic choir, but we do have to work with the world that is. And saying, when the foundational problems of corruption and immorality in the world are solved, why then I will participate in the doings and dealings of the planet, is a very bad idea. The perfect is the enemy of the good, as you know. I'm going to wait until all women are sane, all men are sane, the institutions are reformed. You know, all we have to do is get rid of fiat currency and central banking. I mean, even trying that can result in a horse head in your bed, or, of course, as Muammar Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein found, it can be a little perilous to try, or Iran, right? It can be a little perilous to try and avoid the central banking setup. It is not going to happen that the world is going to be what you want it to be, and then you can participate. We are in the nature of physicians. And it would not make much sense, of course, for a physician to say, I'll become a doctor when there's no illness in the world. When everybody's healthy, I'll be a doctor. No nutritionist would say, well, I'm only going to hang up my shingle and be a nutritionist when everybody eats perfectly for themselves. That's not something that's going to happen. We are here to fix, to repair. No mechanic is going to say, I'll open up my shop as a car mechanic once nobody has any cars who break down anymore. We are in the realm and nature of doctors, healers, reasoners, philosophers, moralists. And to try to find a way to bring morality to a benighted and corrupt world is the big challenge. And you don't bring morality to a benighted and corrupt world with a wish list. And listen, I got no problem with the wish list. Lord knows I've made a few of my own over the years. Could fill volumes. The wish list. All we need to do is. It sort of reminds me. So way back in the day when I was in the business world, I did a business in China. And I remember talking to people who were doing business in China, and they would say, well, listen, man, all we have to do is get 3% of this widget market and we'll be making a fortune. I'm like, well, I mean, 3% doesn't sound like much. 3 cents on a dollar. 3% doesn't sound like much. But when you sort of break it down into actual numbers, well, it is in fact quite a lot, and it's hard to get. A wish list is not an action. This is something one of my early project managers said. It's a pretty common statement in business and elsewhere. Hope is not a strategy. Desire is not a plan. How are we going to practically and measurably make the world a better place? I remember, I'm not, of course, a big fan of Bill Gates, but I remember when he first got into charity after he was kind of chased out of Microsoft by the DOJ constantly going after Microsoft for antitrust violations, which it had done, I think, 13 years before to IBM and eviscerated that company as a creative force. And he kind of went into the philanthropic or the charitable realm. And, you know, people are saying, oh, we're taking all this money and we're doing what? I don't know. We're distributing mosquito nets in Africa. And he'd say, oh, okay, well, how this, how that, you know, what are the numbers? What has been the reduction in mosquito-borne illnesses? And nobody had a clue, had any clue. Nobody had any clue. And he said, look, you can't manage what you can't measure. You cannot manage what you cannot measure. If you can't measure the good you're doing in the world, you're not doing any good in the world. I had a marketing guy once, and it was not, I didn't hire him. I'm going to sort of put that up front. It doesn't particularly matter. It's just a little bit of ego retention here. And if you want to ask me questions or make comments, honestly, please just raise your hand and we'll flood you in. But I had a marketing guy, and he was constantly, you know, spending money and going on trips and doing conferences. And I'm like, okay, but how do you tangibly measure whether what you're doing is the best thing to do? You know, we can all do just about anything in this life, in this world. How do you know that what you're doing is the best thing that you could be doing? Well, you have to measure it. You have to measure it. When I see people, and again, I sympathize, that, well, we got to reform the family court system. It's like, okay, that's nice. But that in the business world is the equivalent of saying, we need to get 50% of this market share. Oh, and it's really, really important that our costs are less than our income. It's like, yeah, but that's kind of taken for granted. Like, of course, your costs need to be less than your income, of course. And yes, it would be nice to get 50% or 3% or 80% of this market share, but how? It'd be nice to reform the family court system. Now, I talked with someone just the other day on this show. And he was like, well, I've been talking about this, that, or the other with regards to liberty. Oh, yeah. He wanted billionaires to fund legal defenses for right-wing causes. It's like, okay, have you achieved that? No, but I've talked about it. It's like the marketing guy. I'm raising brand awareness. I'm influencing mind share. It's like, that's a whole bunch of syllables to, don't you dare measure what I'm doing. I want to talk about things. I want to have a wish list. But I don't want traction, because whenever you promote virtue, you interfere with the plans and goals of corrupt and evil people, right? You're not if you're a forensic accountant, you're supposed to go in and find fraud in some sort of area or place or company. And you find the fraud and you track it down to the people, you know, accountant style. Well, those people are going to be very unhappy that you're closing in on them and finding the massive tranches of money that they've spun off into the stratosphere of their Swiss bank accounts. So they're going to have, you know, the enemy gets his say too, right? So I think, at least for me, one important way to guide the time and effort and energy that you put into the world is to say, who's bothered by what I do? Now, this, of course, in a moral sense, is the most foundational. But even in the business sense, right? When I sold a $1 million system, that meant my competitors didn't get to sell their $1 million system. Is anyone bothered by what you're doing? If you get the girl that everybody wants, then other guys don't get the girl that you get. If you get the job, all the other people lined up. Do you understand? Is anyone bothered by what I'm doing? Is anyone bothered by what I'm doing? If nobody's bothered by what you're doing, well, my friends, you're not really doing anything. Is anyone who profits from the corruption of the current family court systems, which is not to say they're all corrupt, but there's some pretty significantly corrupt elements. If anyone who profits and gains power from the corruptions of the family court system, are they bothered by you saying, gee, it'd be nice if we could reform the family court system? I would hazard a guess and say, no, they're not really bothered. You know, if you actually do things that bother evildoers, then you experience blowback. Now, of course, everybody wants the benefit of feeling like they're doing good without actually provoking a response from corrupt or evil people. I understand that. But it's fake. It's fake. The reason why nature has implanted in us such a thrill and substantial level of bone marrow joy in the pursuit of virtue is that's what's needed to survive the blowback from corrupt and evil people when you actually promote virtue, which is the same as thwarting the designs and desires of evil. If there's a whole bunch of counterfeit bills running around, right? Floating around. And you come up with a little wand. You just wave the wand and it will immediately light up the counterfeit bills. Well, if the violent and corrupt counterfeiters, I'm talking about the, not the public ones, but the private ones, if the violent and corrupt counterfeiters get wind of this invention of yours, well, they're going to have a say about it too. They may bribe you to not release this. They may threaten you. They may set fire to your little basement factory. They might threaten your family. They might do just about any number of things. You know, if the counterfeiters are getting kickbacks from people in power, they might contact those people in power and say, well, you ain't going to be getting any kickbacks if this guy's counterfeit detection machine gets out into the marketplace, bro. So what are you going to do about it? How are we all going to stay in our vicious business? Now, if your counterfeit detection machine doesn't work, it's not going to bother anyone. In fact, they might actually prefer it. If it's like Theranos, right? Because then people think that they're protected from counterfeit bills when they're not. If you run a profitable organized crime ring producing counterfeit bills, and you hear someone say, yeah, you know, it'd be really great if there was some kind of way to figure out counterfeit bills more easily, would you be bothered by that? Nope. Doesn't bother you at all. You'd probably have a bit of a wry smile. You might even order the guy a drink. Yeah, me too, man. That would be great. But if you see someone, maybe at some conference, demonstrating, boom, foolproof way of immediately identifying counterfeit bills, well, that's going to get your attention, isn't it? Because now the promotion of virtue in honest money is going to impact you and your criminal enterprise. And not only are your counterfeit bills going to be worthless, but your ass may go to jail. Because if you can scoop up all these counterfeit bills, maybe there are fingerprints on it, maybe there's some dye they can trace back, maybe there's some paper they can trace to a theft. It's bad. It's bad. So don't think you're doing something by saying, wouldn't it be nice if, I wish if, well, what we've got to do when you don't actually do anything. And by doing anything, I mean promote and reason, right? Nothing violent, right? But we got to be nice if, we got to, I mean, don't. Just resist the urge. Because when you put out these wish lists, and again, I say this with sympathy, and Lord knows I've had my own, so, you know, this is not any superiority thing. But, oh man, if you put out these wish lists, you make it so much harder for those of us really working to create tangible goods and tangible virtues in society. You make it way harder for us. Because what happens is we have the high road, the hard road, and you have the easy talk about things and never achieve anything road. The seductive road, the road of easy virtues that lead nowhere and change nothing. And we're, you know, the reason why I'm being a bit blunt here is that you and I are in competition, right? You and I are in competition because I'm trying to get people off the couch and out in the world doing things. And you're saying, oh, just stay on the couch, man. Just, you know, daydream and talk about, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be good? Wouldn't it be nice if, and we gotta, you know, but never actually do anything to bring anything about. We are in competition. I'm telling people, you gotta exercise, you gotta change your diet. And you're saying, you just have to read books about it and just, you know, you just gotta think about it. You say, I gotta change my diet. It'd be great if we changed our diet. Be great, be nice to exercise. So we're in competition. Because when people see that fork in the road, one leads to the big chatty forehead and one leads to whatever soporific quicksand, sophistry, paralysis, indecision, quagmire you're describing or luring people into, then they won't take the hard road if they're tempted by the easy road. Right? That's just not a thing, right? They're not going to take the easy road. Sorry, they will take the easy road. If they think the easy road is effective and if you just jawbone about stuff and wish list and right, as opposed to, you know, the promotion, say, of peaceful parenting. Sorry, the person who wants to chat, who has got a username, which is my last name, I get it. You're just a troll. But if you do have, you know, serious questions or objections to anything that I'm saying, criticisms, I'm thrilled to hear from you. Really love to chat with y'all. and this is my part apology tour for not getting to people earlier today, but I can, it's funny, like I can feel in my brain when the hourglass runs out. You ever do those little egg timers or you play these games, you flip over the hourglass. I can feel those last grains of sand escaping my brain, falling out of my brain. And it turns into this leaden shoe print of smoking former inspiration. I remember when I could philosophize and I had good ideas. Ah, what, that was wonderful. Yes, magnificent. I remember it was somewhere on the Burma Road. Old imperialistic footprints of glowing thought, how they hath faded away, carried off by the native bearers who are startled by the sound of a lion. All over. I could feel it draining away. I have this when I'm writing a book at the moment, and I can feel that. For me, it's always around 3,000 to 5,000 words. I can just feel like it's not mid-sentence, but I feel like, oh, got to bring this in for a landing. Inspiration's running dry. So that's what happened earlier today. But I guess like a teenage boy of 19, I recharge fairly quickly, you know, in terms of muscularity and tendon recovery. So yeah, we're in competition. I'm offering people the hard road, which works. You know, my goal was to create measurable reductions in the amount of violence in the world. My goal was, and is, and remains, to measurably reduce the amount of violence in the world. And again, it's impossible to know for sure, but back of the napkin calculations are that I've reduced 1.5 billion hits on children through the promotion of peaceful parenting and other things. That's measurable. And this is, you know, for those of you who don't know the history of this, I'll keep it brief. And again, happy to have you chat. I'll keep it brief. So libertarians and I were, you know, thick as thieves, cheek by jowl. We were close. I was invited to libertarian conferences, all kinds of good, wonderful stuff. And I kept haranguing them about a couple of things. Number one, you cannot claim to have an affectionate relationship with people who want you thrown in jail for disagreeing with them. You cannot. That's not love. That's not affection. That's not good regard or anything like that. You got to live by your values or drop your values. If you're going to break bread with people who want you thrown in jail for disagreeing with them, which is most statists, again, after they understand it, not before, right? Because you got to understand things before you help morally responsible people, kind of in a state of nature, right? I talked about that at Libertopia in 2011. It was Dick Gregory, the great Dick Gregory, introduced me, and is a great guy. Man, he could do a fantastic Muhammad Ali impersonation. I hit you so fast. I miss you catch a cold anyway. And there was that, and then there was peaceful parenting. And if you want to spread the non-aggression principle, you should apply it to the sphere which has the most common violations of the non-aggression principle that you can do the most about. Say, war is a really bad violation of the non-aggression principle. Yes, but you can't do anything about it. You can't stop it. But you can talk to people about hitting their kids. You can do that. And they didn't like that. All right. I don't even know how to pronounce this username. MySmod. Mismood. Mismood. What's on your mind, my friend? Stefan? How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I just want to say I'm a big fan of yours and thank you that you're doing good things.
Oh, thank you. Well, that's a nice little bounce in and bounce out. Here I was relaxing and waiting to absorb the floodgates of curious language from a listener. Which is fine. So yeah, to sort of continue with the libertarians. And don't get me wrong, I love me some libertarians. Love me some libertarians. But, and I had this debate with Walter Block, Dr. Walter Block, about spanking and all that kind of stuff. And privately, the libertarians have told me, yeah, that does kind of work. It is kind of important. And we thank you for that aspect of it. And it does, you know, there's something about a business education that is kind of irreplaceable. I mean, and by a business education, I mean like like a serious high stakes business education. So as you probably know, I grew up really poor, dirt poor, welfare poor, and all of that. And then I ended up in the business world, or co-founded a company in the business world. And it was really high stakes. I'd studied economics, of course, but I didn't know sort of the practical aspects of the business world. And I had to sign these big promissory notes to the bank to cover payroll, which would have bankrupted me for a long time if we hadn't been able to make the business work. So just measurable stuff. Business is a metronome of cash requirements, because sometimes businesses take, you know, 30, 60, 90 days to pay, but your payroll is every 2 weeks, like it or not. Dunk, dunk, dunk. Cash flow is king. And most businesses fail because they don't take into account cash flow. Well, the money's coming. It's like, yeah, but you can't say to your employees, I'm gonna pay you in 30, 60, 90 days. You got to pay them every 2 weeks because they got their bills to pay. And so measurable results, it sort of shook me. The business world deeply and viscerally shook me out of the abstract world that I'd been in. Because, of course, I was a debater. I did 2 years of an English degree. I was almost 2 years at the National Theater School. I did a history degree, and then I worked, and then I did a graduate degree in history. And it was, I mean, you got your basic bills and all of that kind of stuff, but it wasn't high stakes in that way. It wasn't high stakes in that way. So when you have actual, tangible, measurable things that you have to achieve, that's really important. It clarifies things. Now, of course, it's a lot easier to do speeches about, you know, ending the Fed and the need for property rights, and I hate tariffs. And I mean, that's fine. I mean, I enjoy it, and I've got lots of shows on that kind of stuff as well. But let's not pretend it's doing any particular virtues in the world. So, all right. We have someone. Steve Austin, the Byronic Man. Austin, what's on your mind, my friend?
So about the artists going to the government. And like, that's what they do now. Art, like musicians and artists. Cause I play music and I've kind of taken a break from it, but I've kind of felt the same way, that it's just like this, we're sucking on the teat of the government, like liberal point of view. It seems like there's no like avenues other than you have to be a liberal artist in entertainment. I was curious, is that what you meant when you talked about that?
Well, I mean, what did you get out of the show? I don't want to repeat it. So what was your sort of essence of the show that I did? Because if you, I obviously don't want to repeat the speeches. So if there's some new tack you want to take, I'm thrilled that. But my basic idea was that AI has shown to us, of course, that people have no loyalty to artists. Like they'll just get AI to do it. And there's a certain amount of hostility towards artists as a whole, particularly on the right. And of course, that's because the people on the right have been attacked, belittled. And like, there's a scene in a movie called The Watchmen where the main character, there's some obviously cliched, southern, horrible, racist Christian. And the guy goes in, like, it goes into the church and just like murders and slaughters like 100 Christians. And it's like, you try that with any other religion, right? My God, it would just be absolutely appalling. So certainly on the right, which tends to be more Christian, they have been regularly mocked and attacked by just about everyone under the sun. I mean, of course, one example is the sort of relentless focus in the media for many, many, many years. I think particularly in Boston, about the sexual abuse allegations against Catholic priests. And does the media care about the sexual abuse of children? No, not in particular. They haven't tried to figure out where the 300,000 children that went missing under Biden have gone. And they don't at all care. In fact, they actively cover up the fact that you are much, much, much more, many, many times more at risk of being sexually abused by a government employee or teacher in a school than you are in a church. So they don't care about any of that stuff. But what they do want to do is they do want to smear the church. And that has been constant. All the priests are evil. All the nuns are bad. And it's just, it's constant. All the Christians are prejudiced. And you know, outside of, you know, maybe Father Stew and some stuff by Mel Gibson, and of course the stuff from Angel Studios, Christians are just portrayed as, you know, bigoted, closed-minded, small-minded, and hypocritical, and it's constant. So that's how Christians view art. And it's really, really hard to understand, in particular American politics, though this is really in the West, but it's most in America. It's really hard to understand American culture and American politics without understanding that it's full of Christians and secular people who seem to have a rabid, if not demonic, animus towards Christianity. So my general argument was that people have, you know, they embrace AI. They don't care about the artists. In fact, they kind of hate the artists. And it's like, good riddance to the artists. I'll do it myself. Thank God I don't have to deal with any artists anymore. And I think that's because of this level of betrayal. So that was sort of my general argument. Is there something that you wanted to clarify or go further in that formulation? Or if you disagree with it, I'm certainly happy to hear that.
No, I agree. I think the Christianity thing is very prevalent obviously in America. And I find it all interesting that the church and state thing is so, it's a ball and chain in a lot of ways in my mind. I think it's a ball and chain for any kind of actual legislation for like politicians and politics. I think it's, if we were to, you know, what is your take on churches being tax-free? Like, what do you think? Do you think that should still be going on?
Oh, I think it's absolutely terrible. I think it's absolutely terrible that only churches are tax-free. Every institution and organization should be tax-free. We should have a voluntary society where people trade without the, you know, infinite corruption of political power. I am an advocate of a stateless society, which we can hopefully achieve in a couple of generations with peaceful parenting. But yeah, I think it's terrible that churches are taxed or not taxed, because that reminds me that everyone else is. And so I think it should be everyone who doesn't get taxed.
Yeah, because it just seems outdated. I don't know. I'm sure you can agree a little bit. It seems outdated. I mean, our country is young.
Come on, man. Be rigorous, right? Outdated doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? What do you mean by outdated?
Christianity is low-key going away, I think, in a lot of ways, to like Zoomers and millennials. And do you think they'll ever really believe these stories or Bible, you know, like, you think it's going to stay prevalent or keep going for these generations? Or, you know, because these institutions like a church is just like, it doesn't mean anything, I feel, for these younger people.
I mean, certainly Christian attendance at church and other forms of measurable forms of religious faith are definitely diminishing, for sure. Do you think that it's being replaced? What do you think it's being replaced by? Because it's not like we all found objective reason and philosophy and so on. So what do you think, with the diminishment of Christianity, what do you think is replacing it?
We're talking on it right now. That's the replacement. The replacement is, you know, social media, the internet. I feel like as soon as the internet happened, Christianity died in a lot of ways. It had been given a terminal illness.
Go on. I'm not sure. I'm not disagreeing with you. Of course, I'm just curious what you mean, if you can explain it a little more.
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, there's less attendance, you know, because what would they rather do? They'd rather be at home, you know, on their phone or playing the video game or whatever, you know. And I think social media just, in general, makes you just like, look, you can just take a picture of yourself in the bathroom and like, look, I'm doing something. You know, like there's my story of the day. Like people do this. Like this has been going on. And because I'm younger, I'm millennial, right? And I believe there's some sort of thing where it's like doing the bare minimum of your own like lifestyle choice of taking a damn picture, you know, showing you're pretty or you worked out today or something like at your house or, you know, it's some kind of a thing you don't have to do at the church anymore. You have to go to church and tell your friend, your buddy at church, you did that, or you were doing something, you know, because churches were mostly used for like, you know, gatherings, the communal thing. You know, I mean, you know, this, I'm not trying to like make, you know, education on what churches really were for a lot of people. It's like, you wanted to talk to somebody. And now with social media, you can do that to the extent beyond any under, you know, standing of what churches used to do.
Well, you don't need to go to church to talk to people, though. You can talk to your family, talk to your friends at home.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, that's why the, I mean,
no,
the
no.
Church...
So saying that church is there so people can talk to each other, it's more work to dress up and go and talk to people at church. I don't think that's what it was about.
Well, I mean, even like a preacher, what was a preacher like? A preacher was a person you would look forward to talking to every week, right? Or every couple times a week, which people still...
Well, no, the preacher you listen to.
Yeah, well, listen to. Like, I mean, to be honest, I'd rather listen to you a couple times a week than a preacher. X. I mean, maybe that's I'm the 1% you talk about, the preference for 1%. But in reality, if more people entertain, you know, people like, even if an actor, for instance, did what you're doing right now, less people would want to go out or do anything. They'd just be like, oh, I can go talk to Pedro Pascal a couple times a week on a social media site. I hope I'm not going too far out in what I'm just trying to make a point about the churches and what they meant at one time to people in the communal sense.
I mean, I appreciate your optimism. I really do. I think that you're very optimistic about the fall of Christianity and that it's only being replaced by things like selfies and online chats and so on. I don't think that's true. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just my perspective, right? So governments have so much power these days, really, that almost nothing happens in a general sense that is not permitted. Almost nothing happens that is not permitted. So then the question is, for me, how does the fall of Christianity benefit those in power? Now, one of the things that is the most powerful to have in life is what's called a mystery religion. And this in many ways was the Catholic Church before the Protestant Reformation, where the laity, the congregation, did not speak Latin. The services were conducted in Latin, and you couldn't even read Latin unless you were, of course, very well educated. And what that meant was that you could only get the facts about Christianity from the priests. You couldn't go to the source material because you couldn't read Latin and you couldn't read anything and you couldn't really understand what the priest was saying. And so you couldn't read the book yourself directly. You had to have the priest tell you what the essence of the religion was. And so you weren't obeying really anything other than a dude. Like the king. Is this a dude with a crown, right? Oh, you should see me in a crown, right? So you're just dealing with a dude. Now, if you're just a dude, you actually have to make rational arguments. You have to maybe have some charisma. You have to have a turn of phrase. You have to be good with analogies. You have to have some evidence, some facts, you know, in order to convince people. But if you can plug in a general sense of the all-perfect divine, well, then I'm not just me, I'm connected to and bound up with infinity and eternity and omniscience. This was the oracle at Delphi, sort of way back in the days of Socrates, that there was a guy who was at the temple of Delphi, and the oracle, you'd go and ask him a question, and he couldn't lie. This is the thing that got Socrates on his whole quest, right? Because Socrates went to the oracle at Delphi, and said, hang on, like who's the wisest? Because I really want to learn from the wisest, because I feel like I don't really know anything for sure. So who's the wisest? And the oracle at Delphi said, well, you, Socrates, are the wisest. And Socrates said, oh, that doesn't make any sense. I really don't know anything. So then Socrates said, well, I have a paradox here. Well, the oracle can't lie, but I can't be the wisest because I know almost nothing. So then he went to go and test everyone, all the great poets. And when he talked to the poets, he said, well, they don't really know anything at all, but they think they know something. But, you know, their genius for poetry and dialogue and so on is just a kind of weird epilepsy that they don't really understand, and it doesn't really give them any particular wisdom. And then he went to the great learned teachers and so on, and he cross-examined them. What is justice? What is truth? What is virtue? And he found that they just contradicted themselves all the time and so on, right? And so, long story short, eventually he was like, oh man, okay, I get it. Oh my God, I can't believe it took me this long. I get it. So when I say I can't be the wisest man because I know almost nothing, but the oracle says you are the wisest man, what the oracle is really saying is you are the wisest man because at least you know nothing, whereas everyone else thinks they know something but is wrong. So you're the wisest man because you've already accepted that you know almost nothing. And so the oracle was a mystery religion. It was just some guy who was backed up with something you cannot question called God. So Christianity went from, to some degree, I'm really simplifying, but that's clarifying, boiling it down to its essence. Christianity went from an empirical religion, because people saw the miracles of Jesus and they saw his divinity, they saw his ascent to the heavens, they saw him coming back to life. So that was an empirical religion. It was not a religion in a sense, that was just science at the time. And then over time, it kind of morphed into a mystery religion in that people couldn't read the text. They didn't understand the language the service was conducted in, and they could only go and ask the priest. And then the priest's answer was informed by omniscience, the priest cannot be wrong because, I mean, the Pope is infallible, right? Because he is motivated by the all-knowing, all-perfect, unlying God. So a mystery religion is, I will tell you what the all-perfect, omniscient, unlying God says, and that way I cannot be wrong. I cannot be wrong. I cannot be wrong. The ultimate AI. Imagine an AI that was all perfect and could not lie, never hallucinated, and got everything exactly right. Everything. And I alone can run this AI. You can come and ask me questions. You can't ask the AI direction. You can't ask AI the questions directly, but you can ask me and I'll ask the AI, and then I'll tell you what the AI says. You can't look at the screen yourself. You can't see what I'm typing. I go into my little booth. I go in behind the curtain, Wizard of Oz style. I come out and tell you. Now, if you believe that the AI is perfect and omniscient, and you believe that I'm telling you the truth about what the AI said, then what I say becomes all perfect, omniscient, and unlying. I cannot falsify. I cannot be wrong. That's a mystery religion. Man goes into a booth, comes out with a perfect answer. You can't question him. That's a mystery religion. And of course, Martin Luther got kind of annoyed at all of this and indulgences and a bunch of other things. And he decided to translate the Bible into the vernacular, into the vulgar, into the local Germanic, and then it got translated to all kinds of other things. And then people started reading the Bible, and they're like, holy smoke on a stick! What's in the Bible is nothing close to what I've been told by these priests. So power loves a mystery religion. I will tell you the truth. You can't see the source documents. I can talk to God. You can't talk to God. You ask me, I'll ask God. I'll tell you back. And to obey me is the same as obeying God. God is all perfect. Can't get anything wrong. Therefore, whatever I say to you is all perfect. Can't be wrong. Can't be wrong. And if you question whether it's wrong, we have a nice bunch of fiery stakes to strap you to. Arthur Miller's The Crucible, another anti-Christian story. So people in power, oh my gosh, do they love themselves a mystery religion. It's perfect. Now, what is the new mystery religion? It obviously isn't Christianity. This is a real question. Anybody wants to take a stab at this? What is the new mystery religion? Austin, feel free to take a stab.
I mean, AI, but you just kind of already said it. If it's not AI or the technology, I don't know what else it could be.
Well, it's not AI, because you can talk to AI directly, right?
Yeah, you can talk to, people are so, there's a spectrum of ideas of what AI is. It's this, thing that will progress into a singularity, or it's just a thing that blurts out information, which I believe you believe that, right? You believe it's just a thing that just blurts out information.
Yeah, it's a word guesser and a synthesizer. And of course, AI is, I shouldn't say it's not a mystery religion. It's a bit of a mystery religion in that people don't think AI is infallible, but AI is programmed so it will program you. I mean, we all know the things that you can, things that are absolutely true that you type into the AI and the AI freaks out and lies to you. Right? So it's programmed, doesn't do that on its own. You'd need much less processing power if the AI wasn't propagandized to avoid certain topics. So it's not AI, because AI came about long after the first fall of Christianity. If Christianity was needed by those in power, it would not be allowed to fail. However, those in power have actively helped to slaughter the remnants of Christendom. So there must be some other mystery religion that has taken its place. Now, it's not politicians. Politicians have been revealed as fallible and so on, right? It's not the will of the people, which has no voice of its own. What is the modern mystery religion?
Well, you bring up the Oracle of Delphi, which is very interesting. I don't want to tell you what the mystery or the new mystery of the religion is, but if it isn't our phones, I don't know what it is. Like, you know, I keep reverting to technology. I'm going to go there only because I know that it's like, well,
no, but you could use technology. You can use technology directly. So that's not the same.
So you don't, I guess you're right. Cause there's no like a mystery in using it. You kind of know what you want to do when you grab a phone or you get on social media. You kind of have an idea of what you know what you can do as a person. There's no like mystery behind what you can do with it.
Right.
Oh, sorry. Somebody else has a real semi-stroke mouthful of a name. Sue Poppin, what's on your mind? Are you with the question? What is the new mystery religion?
Yeah, statism?
That's not new. That's been around forever. Mm. And with regards to statism, you can look up the laws directly. They're not in some inaccessible way or place. I mean, they may be somewhat contradictory and incomprehensible, but it's not that.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the monitor.
Everyone's going to kick themselves. Oh, you're going to kick yourselves. I'm so sorry. It's so annoying.
You're good at these. You're good at these.
No, I
simple
stalkers. No, because we've all experienced it directly. All right,
my smoothie. We don't know.
We're just going to throw people in here and see. Now, listen, I could be wrong. I'll make a case for it. I could be talking out of my armpit here, but I'll make a case. My smod, what is the new mystery religion? Jack, are you chomping at the bit too? What is the new mystery religion? Tell me, my brothers and sisters. Sunday, it's Sunday. Tell me, what is the new mystery religion? Tell me.
Fear?
I would say it's a religion of victimhood, where everyone feels like they're a victim, and victims are praised.
I mean, that certainly is a mechanism of power, but you can at least go and query those victims. You can look at their data. You can rebut them. It's not a mystery religion.
Okay, thank you.
No, it's a great comment, though, and I think it's close. Sage, what do you got? What is the mystery religion? Brothers and sisters!
Speak today. I got a good one. Climate change?
Climate change, I think that's a part of it. That's a part of it.
Maybe wokeism?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
I think it's a part of it. But you can look at the source data. And in fact, you know, there's people who have looked at Michael Mann's work and so on and found it wanting in various ways. So it's a subsection of a larger thing.
Is it wokeism?
You know what? We're gonna throw everyone in. No, wokeism you can cross-examine and you can look at the source data and you can argue against it. So anybody who hasn't chimed in, honestly, feed
me. Because
you all could have better answers than I do. So don't. I'm not the oracle here. So what is the new modern mystery religion? Because it has to be something because it's so useful to those in power. Sorry, go ahead.
Is it science?
Oh, okay. Now we get to somewhere.
That's a good one.
That's what I wanted to say as well.
All right, you all make.
I was about to say science.
Make the case. How is science? Oh, come on, think of COVID, man. How is science the new medicine?
Because you have people who claim that they're smarter than you, and then they tell you something, and it's like, oh, you know, let's listen to this. Although you have no idea where the proof is coming from, but because they're the experts, it's like, you know.
I like the applause sound effect. That's great. Sorry, go ahead.
If you're having a society that's like trying to push scientists on top, and then you're having the system feed in those same scientists by only having a structure that benefits them, then they can just make whatever facts that they want, and they have the quote-unquote meritocratic proof to do so.
Can you query the scientists directly? Can you get all of their source data? I mean, looking under COVID, right? And like, I'm not saying this for all science, right? There's some subsets of science where you can request the data and so on. But let's look at the big advancement of scientism, right? Which is the cult of science, the mystery religion called science. It's not real science, obviously.
It's a dogma.
What did Anthony Fauci say about trust and science?
I am the science.
And to doubt me is to doubt science. This is exactly the goddamn same as a psycho priest saying to doubt me is to doubt God himself. It's safe and effective. Oh, can we see the data? Hell no. Sorry, go ahead.
That's true.
What I would consider dangerous here is that science or whatever is trying to hijack has been presented as a direct contradiction to what you are saying about religion. It's being solved as something we have finally solved the issue of this being a superstitious mechanism of gaining knowledge. We have finally resolved the issue. And many people do not notice that what we've basically done is we've replaced the one priestly class with metal.
Well, we have returned from the relative objectivity of at least you can read the Bible in your own language to if you try to ask for the data, we're going to laugh at you and hide behind the government. The new mystery religion is the guys in the white coats. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, isn't it just technocracy then? Wouldn't technocracy be any this trusting the experts and the technical? That's the religion of, or that's the their idea.
But you can't.
Right?
The whole point, you can't trust the experts because they don't provide the source data. So often, they don't tell you why. They don't step you through the reasoning. They say the most absurd stuff, and you get punished if you question. That's how you know. Like, what do I say every show? I say questions, comments, criticisms, whatever you like. Push back, man. I did a whole show on Friday night telling people, tell me everything I got wrong about young men. Fix me up, right? Lead me away from error. So, you know what happened to people in social media who said things, basic things, like, hang on a sec, this is, mRNA is completely untested technology. It failed on animals all the time. How could you possibly say it's safe and effective after only testing it for a couple of months? How can you say it's safe for pregnancy when your testing cycle is significantly shorter than the cycle of pregnancy? You can't know these things. You can't know. I remember saying this, back in the beginning of 2020 when they first started talking about these vaccines. I did entire shows where I said, look, come on, this is not super complicated, folks. The average length of trial for a vaccine using existing technology, not this new freaky stuff, the average length of trial for a vaccine is 10 years. And it has a 94% failure rate. So if they say it's safe and effective, and they've only done it in a couple of months, they need to tell us what steps they skipped, right? It's kind of like if you say, oh, I need to get my basement finished, right? And some guy comes to you and says, well, you know, it's a big job, man. It's going to be $150,000. It's going to be 6 months, right? And then another guy comes and says, 8 minutes, $45. Would you take the second guy seriously? I mean, probably not, right? Because it'd be like that's that's impossible, right? Well, so if they're going to take a 10-year if they're going to take a 10-year process down to 3 months or whatever it was, it's not believable. Sorry, go ahead.
You were saying asking whether I would treat this person seriously. It depends who's paying them for this. The same thing.
No. It's your basement. Your basement. Hang on. It's your basement. Let's not complicate things, right? It doesn't depend who's paying it. I said it's your basement. Someone's going to fix up your basement.
Of course, in this case, I agree. I was being overly metaphoric, but I was what I was trying.
No. Please. We're trying to simplify here. Please don't try to look clever by overcomplicating things, because this is like you're not going to believe someone if you get a bunch of estimates that say,
of course,
you know, like six months, $100,000, $150,000, maybe 5 months or 7 months. But some guy comes and says 8 minutes, $45. You're just going to say, well, this is a madman, right?
There was a price that had to be paid for disbelieving it, doubting. And that's a price because you've brought the example of what happened to the people in the social media. And the social media was not where this problem ended, right? People were jeopardizing their work, for example.
I get that. So social media is just one of the punishment things, right? So what drives mystery religions? Why would you be bothered? What drives mystery religions is fear.
Fear.
You're going to go to hell, right? And what drove the mystery religion that was occurring in COVID? Fear. You're going to die. Remember, we saw all of these not exactly organic articles of like, well, Billy Joe Bob thought he was too good for the vaccine. And as he drew his last breath surrounded by his four sobbing children, his dying words were, by God, I wish I'd taken that vaccine. Right?
Stefan, one question about that. Like, how do you get people to believe fear-based religions?
Propaganda.
Well, no, because it's not religion to them. I'm not afraid of the punishments of Zeus, because I don't believe in Zeus, right? So if somebody can go, Zeus is going to punish you, it's like, yeah, your imaginary friend holds no power with me. So they have to believe that it's not a religion, that it's real, right? So Socrates went to the Oracle at Delphi. The Oracle at Delphi told him he was the wisest man, though he said he knew nothing. And the Oracle at Delphi cannot lie. So it was a real connection to a real, all-honest, all-knowing God. So it was not a religion, it was physics. And so people felt that without the vaccine, they were going to die, and the vaccine was perfectly safe and effective and free, so it would be insane and evil not to take it. You're going to kill grandma, you're going to make other people sick because of your anti-science, willful prejudice against the common good. And you're going to die without the vaccine. Go ahead, sorry.
I just had to make the most disturbing peak of this situation was whenever people on CNN were laughing at people dying in beds because they didn't take the vaccine. And I remember, like, family members of mine, like, just saying, like, well, they should have took the vaccine. It's like, did you ever run into that situation where it was like that? It was crazy. I'll never forget that situation that was going on at the time.
I hear what you're saying, and of course, it was pretty corrupt. I mean, you've heard of the Darwin Awards, right?
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, I'll keep this real brief. The Darwin Awards are handed out to people whose absolute idiocy have taken them out of the gene pool, right? So there was one example of a bunch of guys who went up on a ski hill late at night after the ski place had closed, the ski resort, and they took a bunch of padding from the bottom of one of the poles that keeps the chairlifts going. They took a bunch of padding off and they decided to write it down, and they wrote it down and they crashed into the pole that they'd taken the padding off and died. Now, is that a bit amusing? It kind of is, right? Is it horrible that they died? Yes, it is. But it's also a little bit amusing. And I think they were just taking that approach. Like, if you're so stupid that you won't take this free, absolutely safe vaccine, and you just hold on to your weird little dogmas about and you endanger people, it's kind of funny. Like, I think we all have a bit of black comedy streak in us as a whole. So I think it was along those lines. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I hear that.
That's what happened. I don't think most people were trying to be cruel with this or having some feeling of revenge. It was rather this kind of dark humor that was in the people. Well, it was so easy to avoid it. You just had to do X, Y, and Z, and you'd be still alive.
That's honestly how I feel about people who do die from the vaccine and the booster shot.
Listen, I hear what you're saying. That's a different conversation, and I understand where you're coming from. And also, of course, if people, like, if they believe, look, you get this virus, and then you spread this virus. If you don't have the vaccine stops your getting infected. It stops transmission, even though it turns out they never tested for that. But it's like, this guy died, which means he's not going to infect, you know, 20 other people. And remember, there were times when, I mean, people were just way off in terms of they thought that like 20%, 30% of people died from COVID. So if some guy's going to infect, you know, 10 people, that's two or three, he's going to kill. And if he dies and then can't pass that along because he's too idiotic to take the vaccine, you know what I mean? Like, if you have that perspective, you can understand, I mean, not that you would sympathize with it, but you can understand where it'd be like they're rolling their eyes, shaking their heads. Well, I guess this guy Darwin award himself out of the circulation, but at least he's not spreading the virus to other innocent people. So that's the most reason. Now, this is why I said earlier, and again, I'm not an oracle here, this is my perspective, but when you said, I can't remember who it was who said, climate change. Well, sure, climate change, I mean, nobody understands these models. They just keep tweaking the models until they get the outcome they want, which is not science. And they're well paid for disaster outcomes, and they're not at all paid. In fact, they'll probably lose half their career or more if they don't come up with danger scenarios. It was kind of a joke in the scientific community for decades that, you know, if you want to study squirrels, you're not going to get any money. But if you want to study the effect of climate change on squirrels, they'll give you $5 million. And it was just, you know, this is not science. This is just government science, but it's become a mystery religion. It's become a mystery religion in that the scientists can't be questioned. They won't show you the source data. Sometimes they won't even share the source data with others.
But additionally, this problem is forbidden from being solved.
Yeah, and it's driven by fear. Yeah, it's driven by fear. The entire planet is going to get microwaved, right? If you don't, like, everyone can take their 747s with their gas-guzzling limousines to Davos or whatever, right? But you've got to, you know, half choke on plastic straws or on paper straws because you don't want the planet to die and you don't want granny to die. So it's fear-based. You're going to hell if you don't believe this stuff. You're going to live in hell if you don't believe this stuff. And if you don't believe it, we'll make your life hell just to drive home the point. So it's fear-based. It is incredibly high stakes. Life and death of the entire planet. You know, it's the same thing as like heaven or hell for eternity. And to question it is a sin. To question it is evil. Doubt is evil, right? And you get this, trust the priests. And you saw this absolutely insane thing. It's completely mental, like deranged psychosis. Trust the science. Absolutely freaking not. Abso-frickin-lutely not. Trust the science. Are you insane? All science is founded on skepticism of experts. That's Dr. Richard Feynman, one of the great physicists of the 20th century. Science is skepticism. Science is bullshit. Like the little cough in the back of Top Gun, right? So all science is based on skepticism. Trust the science is the complete opposite. It's like saying fudge the math. The math is not fudging. And so the idea that people with a straight face would both say and listen to and repeat a mantra called trust the science, it means that instead of funny hats and big robes, you have white lab coats and little pocket protectors. And now this is the new mystery religion that you better shut up and obey. You cannot question. It's all fear-driven. And it's incredibly high stakes. And if you question them at all, you're getting people killed. If you question global warming, then you are going to drown all of the people in the Philippines. You know, like people are so deranged about this stuff. I mean, I was talking to a guy not too long ago who was saying, well, these islands are going to be underwater. And I'm like, what? What do you mean these islands are going to be underwater? They're in the middle of the Pacific. Why would only those islands be under? Do they get a little mountain of water just where those islands are? Doesn't it kind of raise evenly? Do you ever try in your bathtub to scoop the water to one end? No, it just rises evenly. But this is what people say. So with regards to the fall of Christianity, yeah, I mean, but Christianity has fallen because they found a better mystery religion called scientism. Because people were, you know, having some skepticism over the old priests, right? Because the free market in science was doing more good, certainly more material good for humanity than the church ever did. Now, you could say the church saved souls, and I get all of that. But in terms of material benefit, science, modern medicine, and the free market materially improved humanity's life by hundreds and now thousands of times in terms of improvement. So people weren't quite believing so much in Christianity. And who were the new people who were improving humanity? Well, for a while, they kind of worshipped industrialists, but then the Marxists came along, so that kind of went tits up. And then, the scientists. So what the people in power do is they latch onto whoever has a good reputation and milk that reputation for power. So scientists have, I mean, they put people on the moon. They invented penicillin. They invented the cure, like the shots for polio. And again, I know some of these are like a little dicey, but you know, the scientists are these objective and rational people who just tirelessly work behind their horn-rimmed glasses for the very betterment of humanity, no matter what. And they're like robots, they're like Vulcans, they're like machines of reason, they can't be corrupted. And so because scientists had a really great reputation, all those in power are like, okay, we're going to scare the shit out of people. We're going to tell them the scientists can save them. And anybody who questions the scientists or the experts, like there's a larger sphere called the expert, but we're really talking about scientism at the moment. Anybody who questions the scientists wants people to die and is like, well, you've seen this, it's a very famous cartoon from not too long ago where there was this wife at the door and there was a guy at a computer and he said, hey, honey, check this out. I've found something important that all the world's top scientists and experts have missed. And this was like mocking, right? Because to question the scientists, to question their motives, to question their dedication to reason, to question their objectivity, to ask for their data is a new, it's blasphemy. Yeah, we have blasphemy laws, which is you get fired if you question the scientists in the same way that in other religious times, if you didn't believe in God, you couldn't get a job. X, Y, and Z, you get fired from your job, or you couldn't work for the government or whatever it was, or even private sometimes, right? So the new blasphemy is questioning the new high priest of the modern mystery religion. So the fall of Christianity has not gotten, in fact, we've regressed, because at least you could read the source data in all forms of modern Christianity. I mean, there's no form of Christianity that has any traction where it's in ancient Aramaic only, and you have to go to a priest to get any kind of facts about it. Everybody can read everything that's translated now. So yeah, the new modern mystery religion is scientism, and quote, experts say, right? I mean, that's just the same as like God has ordained. Experts say, trust the priest, trust science. I am God, I am science. Like, it's all completely psycho, but it's the oldest control mechanism in the book. If you doubt that witch doctor who controls the rain, then clearly you want everyone to die of thirst and starvation when the rains don't come. Right. Sorry, go ahead.
What you have mentioned a while ago is the reason for which there's been a replacement, this replacement of religion by science. You've provided an example of material benefit delivered by the scientific revolutions. That would suggest that this change was rational. And I'm not exactly capable of clarifying my thoughts here, but I'm not sure that this reasonable change was actually dictated by reason. And this raises a question in me.
Hang on. Sorry. I'm a little lost. My apologies.
Yeah.
So are you saying that the scientists were good and then became bad or something like that? Like the scientists did provide material benefits and then it didn't?
This is what I understood when you said that science has replaced the role of religion by providing material benefits.
But remember, originally science was private. Science was voluntary, right? So scientists were, you know, the gentleman scholars, the aristocrats, the middle class, and so on. I've got a whole scene in my novel called Just Poor about the rise of science in the middle of nowhere. Like, there were scientific communities, even in the middle of like farming communities, there were. And so I've got a whole scene about this, and that actually comes from quite a bit of accurate history. So science was private. It wasn't run by the government. It wasn't controlled by the government. It wasn't controlled by public money or debt. It wasn't in the service of those in power. Now, it was to some degree, they loved the benefits because, you know, you got to design new weapons and better ships and, you know, improved gunpowder and so on. And the scientists figured out that scurvy was killing off the British sailors, right? In fact, more British sailors died from scurvy than from enemy gunfire or cannon fire, I suppose. And so science was originally private. And then what happened was, because scientists had such good reputations and priests were losing their reputations, the government started paying scientists to harness their good reputation and turn them into new high cult leaders of the mystery religion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for this remark. But what I was, what I'm wondering about right now is whether that could be replaced with something else, something less scientific. Is there going to be a next?
Well, there's almost nothing less scientific than what's going on at the moment. Because when science gets co-opted as a mystery religion, it becomes profoundly anti-science. Go ahead.
I'm purely talking about appearances, of course. That it is being sold by science, and that's when the accuracy ends. But what I'm wondering is whether there is going to be a next big thing after this.
See, this is a funny thing. You're the complication guy, right?
Yes.
So I think we've got a huge chunk of information to process and absorb here, right? I mean, if you haven't heard this argument before, there's a lot to process here, right? Because this explains all of COVID and a lot, almost all of the modern world in terms of why the government funds science. So that's a lot to process, would you say, right?
Uh-huh.
But you're like, well, what's going to replace it? What's the next thing? And I'm like, can we just process this thing? Like, you jump to complications like crazy,
sure.
Right?
Sure, I understand.
I mean, just absorb, right? Just absorb, and you know, you can criticize it and all that, but it's a way of moving away from the current understanding to say, ah, yes, but what could replace it? In 100 years, it's like that's not, you know, that's not really valuable in the context of what we're talking about.
I understand. Sure.
Like, open source information sounds like a great way of replacing that sort of stuff. Also, Stefan, I wanted to get your thoughts on feudalism and whether. Like, let's suppose like, would feudalism be like a better alternative to like the current like EU political system in Europe?
Why would you? I mean, what's the? I mean, we're not getting feudalism, so I'm not sure what's the point.
Yeah, like just as like I don't know, would it?
No, but why we're not getting feudalism? Well, it's like the people who say, well, would the ancient Norse religions be better than Christianity? It's like, what? They're not coming back. Like, why would we talk about these kinds of? I mean, I'm happy to talk about it, but I don't really know what the point is.
All right, I mean, I feel a lot about this on like a lot of political issues. Like, what's the point of it? But I also want to get your thoughts on Gnosticism.
Go on.
A Gnosticism, like Gnostic Christianity. So, I meant like the. Like, what are your thoughts on the demiurge as a concept?
Okay, so do you know whether or not we got a whole bunch of people listening here? We got 10 people in the conversation. Do you think it might be helpful to explain to them what you're talking about, or is something that I should do?
I'd say you're probably better at explaining it than me.
Explaining Gnosticism?
Yeah, and the demiurge. You seem like a pretty confident, articulate individual, so.
Okay. All right, so Gnosticism is very early religious beliefs around the first century AD, and they wanted people to have a direct connection with God and not go through the church as a whole, like pray to God directly. And I mean, that really is the ultimate not mystery religion, is you don't even need a priest. You can just talk to God directly. And so that would be, I mean, obviously, there's a lot to it, and I'm certainly no big expert on it, but is there something that you wanted to talk about in more detail?
Yes, like the concept of a demiurge in terms of Gnosticism, such as, like, God, rather than being benevolent, he actually, like, does plenty of, like, bad stuff and confines people in some ways to the material world. So, we could use... So, like, that's more of, like, my own personal belief in those terms.
That the demiurge is another way of saying God. Is that right?
Yes, but it's, like, a not benevolent God who's, like, bad or, like, evil.
Okay. So, your belief is that God is evil?
No. Like, my belief is that God is the all. So, he, like, generates our entire existence. And so, it's, like, pretty much his fault, like... So you can think of God more as like a giant computer that creates reality. So he pretty much creates all the good stuff and all the bad stuff that exists.
Okay, so it's another way of saying everything that is, but imbuing it with the concept of a creator. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So what is it that you would like to, or what is it you would like me to talk about with regards to that?
Just wanted to like get some of your own philosophical takes on it. And wanted to touch up on the thing about, what was it called? Oh, yeah, like involving science. They find it pretty ironic that a lot of people who push the science stuff, they also deny anatomy and physiology and biology.
Okay, so that's a very interesting topic about the demiurge and Gnosticism and so on, but I think it's a little bit off the beaten path of what we're talking about as a whole, which is trying to sort of penetrate and understand the mystery religion of modern scientism. And so let's bookmark that. If we have time at the end, we can talk about that more, but I don't want to go off on a journey when we've got 10 people in here. I think we're talking about the mystery cult of modern science. So I'm happy if other people have comments or criticisms or questions.
How about China, Stefan? Is it China and their government? Like, aren't they just, isn't that literally like the way they think right now, modern China and CCT? Like, aren't they like, they're all in on these ideas? Or is this propaganda?
Okay, well, what do you mean by these ideas? We've talked about a lot.
Oh, trusting the expert. Like they've gotten to the point, I mean, with what they work with, they're at the point where you can't question the expert in China, right? Isn't that kind of like...
Well, yeah, so I think you're onto a great point there, which is that any entity that is considered to be essential and moral, which cannot speak to itself, must have spokespeople who inevitably can't be questioned, right? So if you, in the communist world, you say, I represent the interests of the proletariat, right? And that the proletariat are noble and good and virtuous and so on, and long-suffering and moral And but obviously the collective, the concept proletariat can't speak for itself any more than God or science, right? Can't speak for itself. And so you have to promote yourself as the spokesperson for this concept that can't speak for itself, right? The good of the nation. I represent the good. Who knows? I mean, the good of the nation is just like an invisible friend that blesses everything you say with omniscience and perfection, right? So rather than make, and people do this with aggression too, right? So you're dealing with sort of cult ideas when you are aggressed against for, like, we can see this with some of the incel anger that's sort of coming at me over the last couple of days, right? It's the bad arguments because there's just a lot of escalation and aggression. And so with, if I could convince everyone in the world that I had an invisible friend who only talked to me, who could never be mistaken, then all I would do is say, my invisible friend Bob has said to me X, and then everybody has to accept X because he's infallible and only I can talk to him. It's a really psycho way of establishing dominance in any kind of conversation. Now, the invisible friend could be a kind of God. It could be a class. I speak for all women as a woman, as women when we, right, could be some concept of womanhood. It could be race. It could be any number of things. And if you can convince people that you are the spokesperson for a perfect concept that can't speak for itself, they have to obey you. You know, I speak on behalf of the proletariat. Well, I don't agree with you. Oh, so you hate the proletariat? Like, you know, we've seen these sort of false dichotomies all the time. If you question the vaccine, then clearly you want people to die. If you say that there may have been some reasons why Russia responded to some of the aggressions in Ukraine, you say, oh, well, then you were a Putin lover or whatever, like these sort of false dichotomies. But yeah, so people are constantly setting up these imaginary concepts that can't speak for themselves and then putting themselves forward as the spokesperson, and you can't question them. If you do question them, then you're corrupted. It's a heresy. It's a heresy. And you have to punish those people, because if too many people question it, the whole thing falls apart.
So we're leaning towards a communist
thing.
We're leaning towards a communist thing right now. This is what I feel like we're sewing into something here. No.
It's the communism, the scientism, the mystery religion, they're all part of the same continuum. They're all different branches of the same tree, which is, I have access to perfect knowledge that you don't have access to, therefore you have to obey me. And it really comes from parents, right? The reason why this stuff is believable is because that's how we all operate when we're little kids. Because our parents are just these big giants who have this mystery knowledge of things and just tell us what we can or can't do, and we don't really understand it, but we just have to obey them. So mystery religion is keeping people in an infantile state. In some ways, a pre-verbal state, because kids learn no around the age of two and a half, and you can't even say no or question a mystery religion. So, like most corruptions, it comes off, you know, some fairly bad and aggressive parenting, but also just some of the necessary aspects of parenting, which is you have to say to your kid, listen, if you've been handling tadpoles, I got to wash your hands. Well, why? Well, germs. Well, what are germs? You have to wash your hands, right? And so there's a certain amount of, you know, your parents just know all of this stuff, and you just kind of have to submit to it, and you can't really understand it all, and you just have to trust. So the mystery religion comes from the real toddler's relationship to the parents, but then writ large. Your parents are gods who have access to information you can't understand, but you just have to obey them, and it's the same thing with the mystery religions, if that makes sense.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So on the point of punishment, it occurred to me that the people were calling for people were calling for put these people in camps to take their children away and all this other stuff when it came to COVID. And so it was justified by this whole, if you don't believe in the science, you're a sinner, right?
Yes. And of course, if you are raising your children to disbelieve in the mystery religion must take your children from you in order to save them.
Did we have anything like that with previous scares, like climate change, or I guess race and IQ is a little bit different one, but I know that there were punishments and stuff, but people lost their jobs, like that.
Well, I'm sorry, with climate change as well, when you have people who are adherents of the mystery religion called science, then if you question that, then you pay a significant social penalty, right? Which is that people are like, oh, well, you're just like, what are you, anti-science? Like, you don't care. Like, oh, you're just one of these deniers, right? They always use this word because it's a Holocaust denier. Okay. But so they just use like denier rather than skeptic, because skeptic is actually kind of healthy, and denier sounds like you're just refusing to state that the earth is round or something like that, or you're refusing to state that it's raining when you're raining because of sinful pride, right? So to rebel against the truth is satanic, right? Because Satan or Lucifer, the bringer of light, knows that God is all powerful, knows that God is all good, but rebels against it anyway. And so to rebel against facts that you already know or should know to be true is the ultimate sin. And so you are punished as a heretic. You are disassociated from, you are ostracized, you're unfellowed, as they would say in some areas. So people will look at you funny. Yes, sir.
Do you mind if I step in on this topic here?
Yeah, go for it.
So that's kind of what I wanted to get into. It's an old video you did years ago. It's the story of your enslavement, right? But it's the enslavement of your identity, which is what Lucifer claimed, right? So he claimed the identity of God, and he took a third of the angels with him, and they were cast out. And that's why we have things like pride and sloth and gluttony, right? Because they are the identifiers which we identify with. And it's the story of your enslavement. It's not that it's a new religion. It's just a mystery because our identity has been enslaved to the world. So if you look at, like, say, science and all the people with the COVID thing, right? Their identity is so wrapped up in trust the experts, or wokeism. Their identity is trapped up in their sexuality, right? And they forget where they come from, right? They've accepted the identity of the story of your enslavement. It's the way, the life, the truth, right? So that's I could ramble on forever about it, but that's kind of how I see this mystery religion.
So in this instance, you would say that Lucifer is the purveyor of a mystery religion, is that right?
Yeah. So
how would that be the case and not the case for, say, the Catholic Church way back in the day, I'm not talking now, which only did the liturgy in Latin and all that kind of stuff?
Mm. Well, they absolutely did. So like you were talking about earlier how people didn't really have access or even literacy to be able to read Latin or read the Bible, let alone a printing press for the average person to get a hold of the Bible. So it wasn't...
Well, it's a very conscious decision, because the Catholic Church at any time could have translated the Bible into the
absolutely.
Local language, right?
Absolutely. It's the bureaucracy of leadership power, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot easier to not be questioned if people can't get your source data, right?
Yeah, look at these feudal era, though, right? Like, so if you go to England, you go to France, you go to all these nations, they have their identity, and the core of the identity was like the kings and Catholic churches, right? It was controlled by these churches and everything, and all these schisms happened, and right? So the mystery religion is the story of your enslavement, right? You're stuck staring at the information on the wall, and whenever you try to leave it, right, you're beaten to death.
Well, and of course, as you know, this whole science came around in many ways to rescue,
yeah,
to rescue humanity from, like, Europe was going through like 300 years of religious war after the Reformation, during and after the Reformation.
Oh, yeah.
And so science came along and said, look, we have a way of resolving disputes. It's not about willpower and violence. It is not about the willingness to use aggression or violence to get other people to believe stuff. We have an objective methodology or discipline by which we can resolve our disputes according to the scientific method.
And that revealed the
methodology to others so that it was no longer a mystery religion. Now, government scientists have these weird, overcomplicated models. You can't get hold of the source data. You can't puzzle out what the hell they're doing, but you have to obey them anyway, which is, again, back to the mystery religion side. But sorry, go ahead.
So, that's kind of what science does, is it identifies how the universe works, right? This is how it works. This is what it is. And it connects
not
the
modern
dots,
science.
Right?
Yeah, not, certainly not government.
Yeah,
science.
The modern
like engineering
era
is better
twisted,
this way.
Right?
Yeah, engineering is better this way. But yeah, engineering is better this way. But no, it's
Homo
really
Deus,
brutal.
Right?
Yeah, it's really brutal what's going on with science these days. All right, is there anyone else who wanted to add to this topic?
Yes, I actually wanted to add quite a bit. I was actually showing my younger brother earlier today that video, The Story of Your Enslavement, which I'm just going to say it's fantastic work, Stefan.
Thank you.
Besides that, I wanted to touch up
on like just that thing about science, which was it's like I'm not gonna expect us to like really win over like those institutions because like they're state owned and want like subsidies and stuff, but like I'd say like certain areas where like the right in general like we're better at it, it's like, and besides like nuclear stuff, crypto, like stuff like they can't control that's not regulated, like that's generally like where that's on the free market, like that's our domain. So it's like if anyone wants to launch like a crypto token or anything like that, or has like a computer science position like on a project needs help, let me know and make sure to DM me. Thank you.
I was wondering if, can anybody hear me? Am I on?
Yeah, go for it.
Like y'all were talking about engineering and classifications. Something I've noticed with religion and like the mysteries, it's like there's, if you can break it up into a classification, because sometimes it's like with Christianity, if you're at a church, everybody's kind of aware that there's a religion around you, right? But sometimes, like with the state, there's a religion around you, and if you talk about, oh, you're religious, you just worship the state, like they're dumbfounded. It's like they're unaware that they're participating in a religion pointing their free will towards a non-existent entity, you know? And I think maybe that's where some of the mystery evolve, or to me, kind of stands out. It's like the more mysterious happens when there's like this fog where it's in between the two, where some people blatantly and openly worship the state, but some people are unaware that they worship the state. I've had conversations with people who identify themselves as anarcho-capitalists. And as you have this conversation, they will talk about, you know, making Ancapistan or whatever, some island that they're able to create a stateless society. However, if you talk to this group very often, they will always say the same thing. They will say, well, eventually a state will emerge. And if you kind of ask them, well, if you say the state is inevitable, then what are we doing this for? It's like you must be a statist as well.
This is where I disagree with you. Like a state's not guaranteed to emerge. Like if you have like an armed enough populace that's trained enough to defend themselves, whereas the more dependent people become, the more easily controlled and subjugated they also become.
But I'm not trying to argue about what would or would not happen. I'm just saying these people are unaware that they are completely believe in the inevitability of a state, almost like
I don't,
like they believe in its existence, a non-existent thing. Like we all, I'm pretty sure everybody in this conversation kind of understands that the state is a concept, is an idea, right? Like the government doesn't really exist, the buildings exist, but
it's an identity, right? And it's one that's difficult to identify with because it's a physical, it's almost a physical thing that's like you can identify with the rock.
But these people, if you wanted to, these people are completely unaware that they worship this thing. And like some people are like, yeah, I worship Jesus Christ. And, you know, maybe they've got a fog in the back of their mind of, well, is God real, that they don't talk about out loud or whatever. But it's like stated, this is our religion. This is the religion we're discussing. But
I'm
when
not
you're talking,
disagree with you that political ideologies are like a lot of the times like a new religion that are emerging. So if that's like your point that you're trying to make, I do agree with you there.
This is different. It's kind of a weird thing where there's a religion that nobody realizes.
Yeah.
What the cloud they're standing in is. What religion are we talking
this
about?
This is
here?
Where I kind of like I half agree with you, but it's like. It's more that, so even if we were to like take scriptures and stuff like that, yeah, you're supposed to do stuff out of the law of liberty, but it's like, well, like I'm not going to get into it because like it Bible generally tells people to submit to authorities. So this is,
religion is a way of life, right? So if you're identifying, let's say you're a libertarian and you have your libertarian way of life or your conservative way or your liberal way or whatever it might be, it's a way of life. And if that's where your principles, the foundation of your principles are, that's your object of worship. That's your identity, right?
I don't really have.
And that's kind of what's happened with politics, right?
Well, I'm sorry. I thought religion was where, you know, somebody says there is this thing called the blank, and I speak for this thing called the blank. I thought that was the religion.
It is.
We
it's a way
about.
Of life, right? It's a way of life, a code of conduct, a moral structure, a foundation for which you live your life. And there's all these different religions because everybody has a different idea of what's true.
Yeah, but
right?
It's a foundation that somebody else tells you to do because they're trying to tell you what to do, right? And they're claiming to speak they claim to speak for the non-existent entity. But like some religions are known to the followers, and that's what I'm trying to just say, that maybe a classification would kind of add to why some of these are so more mysterious, is because some of these people are following a religion where they are genuinely unaware that they are pointing
their blind to what it is, right?
Towards a non-existent entity. Yeah.
Yeah. They're calling bitter sweet and sweet bitter, you know?
Well, I kind of wanted to jump in. Okay. Stefan, step on there. Have you heard of the cathedral from Curtis Yarvin?
I vaguely, but you'll have to break it out for me a bit.
A lot of what he says is a bit of gobbledygook, but I think he perfectly analogized it to, he sort of borrows the cathedral term from the dominance of the Catholic Church, where the establishment was the Pope, and he would send out his scriptures to the bishops who would propagandize it and push it onto the populace. And he says how that's sort of been replaced today, how the establishment, which is mainly the state, will fund scientists and bureaucrats and push it onto journos to lay it out to the populace. It's decentralized narrative control.
Yeah, I certainly accept that that's a thing.
It's a very good analogy that I picked up from him. And he sort of has another one called like mandarins and barbarians, where there's a certain amount of class of people that want to try and create as many laws and another that want to tear them down.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's, it's soft power, right? I mean, one of the things that's happened in America is because there are legal protections for speech. The control of speech has had to go underground and, you know, arguably is more damaging, right? I mean, you might get fined a couple of $1,000 for a hate speech violation, but deplatforming can cost some people huge amounts of money, right? So you could argue that speech is actually more punished in the US with the First Amendment than it would be elsewhere. So with the difference that there's no jail, right? So I get all that, but yeah, it's rough how that kind of stuff works. But I mean, you know, that's the inevitable blowback that you're going to get from, as the aforementioned, interfering with the goals of evil. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's completely also down to the interpretation of who's in charge, what agencies' motives are being ruled. As in the UK, we never really had a certain amount of protection on speech, but under the conservatives, it's been all right. Not as good as you'd like it, but it's okay. And then as soon as another agency takes over, they, using the same laws, completely go hammer and start sending people 2 years, 3 years in prison for Facebook posts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, now emojis, right?
Emojis, yeah.
Yeah, emojis has now become a thing as well. All right. So, listen, we've had a good old chat. Is there things that people wanted to toss in at the end here? Get your sort of final thoughts in before we close down for the night? And really appreciate, this has been a first sort of round table on X, which I really, really appreciate. Yeah. You guys,
is this only related to scientism?
Don't open up new topics, I would say, because but honestly, it's been a real pleasure having everybody in. This is the first time I've tried having a whole bunch of people in it. It's worked beautifully, and I really, really appreciate everyone for that.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I had another thought on science, science religion or scientism thing, which is sort of an effect of it. But, you know, you see people who talk about like flat earth stuff, and I feel like there's some sort of connection there as well. I know it's kind of opening up a bigger topic to talk about, but it's something to mull over, I think, because it's like the science has been like the actual skeptical science, and you can look at the stuff and you can evaluate the arguments, but people just sort of disbelieve in theories that had, you know, a good basis for quite a long time. And now that whole, because the science establishment is a religion in like an obvious sense, people just sort of dismiss a whole lot of what's science kind of have quote unquote established. I use that term advisedly here, but.
Well, and I think that's a good point. One of the ways you know that something's cultish or it's a mystery religion is that people don't accept responsibility for being wrong. There's never any punishments, right? So the typical formulation is, well, if good things are happening to you, that's because God loves you and you're being rewarded for your faith. If bad things are happening to you, either it's because you did something wrong or because God has singled you out for testing because you're extra special, valuable, and need to be tested and challenged and so on. So there's never any fault. Of course, we can see the same thing with the climate change models that they're all wrong. They're all completely wrong, but it doesn't matter. Nobody loses any funding. Nobody loses any work or jobs, foreign policy. Same thing, federal policy, interest rates, money printing, and so on. Nobody suffered for COVID and all of the bad decisions that were made through that. And so this is another way that you know whether you're dealing with a mystery religion. And if people do this with COVID too, right? They made terrible decisions at the time, wrong, corrupt, immoral decisions. And then they say, well, later, well, you know, we didn't have perfect knowledge. We were just trying to make the best decisions we could. And parents do this the same thing. We did the best we could with the knowledge we had at the time, which is never acceptable for you when you're writing a math test in grade 8 or something. But so this inability or this unwillingness or this lack of capacity for the system to self-correct, that's another mystery religion thing. It's like, well, why are bad things happening? It's a mystery, right? There's no punishment. Like the witch doctor, right? The witch doctor says, well, do this and I'll bring the rains, right? And then if the rains don't come, he says, well, you didn't do it right. Or somebody came and gave the presents to me, but in bad faith. They didn't do it with good faith. And like, they can just make stuff up. So there's no negative return on decisions, and there's no null hypothesis.
That's a really frustrating part too. It's because like when it's not a mystery religion, like if you're having a conversation with a Buddhist or something, or the medicine man, like it will go longer. It will take up more of your time because they will keep like, you know, changing the terms or moving the goalposts. But if you're having a conversation with somebody that doesn't realize that they're religious, that doesn't realize they're part of the religion, it's like the conversation just goes off the rails a little bit, or gets violent or whatever faster. So it like sucks more of your life away arguing with the people that are known, like they know they're religious or they admit to be religious, than the people who really don't know they're in a religion.
Stefan posted a video where it was the video about where you're talking about the inner monologue, and to find out if somebody has an inner monologue or not, you would ask them if they understand your position.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they don't understand your position, don't even engage.
Right, right. I mean, that was sort of the conversation I had today with the guy about the risks of marriage and so on. It's like he couldn't even articulate. Now, I think I did a fairly good steel man job of his when the other guy was like, well, you should have handled it differently. I'm like, okay, let me play him and you be you and show me how you'd handle it better. And it's like, he couldn't do it, right? So that's a sort of a foundational thing. And, you know, if people want to tell
isn't
me how to handle
called,
things. Sorry?
Isn't that called cognitive dissonance when you present facts and information and they reject them as facts and information?
I wouldn't say cognitive dissonance. So here's the thing, right? So, I mean, with the guy today, not the first guy, but the guy who was trying to tell me how I should have handled it differently or better. And I said, it was all too abstract and I like practical examples of things. And so when I said, okay, I'll be the guy who's the hedonist and you be me, right? I don't know if you were all listening to that call or not, but it's going to go out tonight. So at least on Twitter. So what happened was he said, Steph, I know how to handle a hedonist better than you do. So then I role played a hedonist and he role played me. And within about 5 minutes, he'd run out of things to say. He couldn't counter the arguments. He couldn't deal with it. Now, rather than say, huh, Steph, wow, you know what? I thought I could handle a hedonist better than you did, but it turns out I can't. I don't really have any answers for him and so on, right? So, you know, I withdraw my criticism, or if I do have suggestions, I'm going to try and find a different approach and so on, right? That would be, I think, a reasonable thing to do. But all he did was he said, well, that's not what he would say. So again, this is just moving the goalpost, right?
Out of curiosity, how would you, Stefan, handle a hedonist?
Well, you're going to have to listen to the show.
Yeah, I guess so.
In which I handled a hedonist. Yeah, so, I mean, his basic argument was, Steph, you should have been nicer so you can change his mind. And I was like, this is a guy who said there's no benefit to men to get married, right? And then I listed off like 15 different fairly scientific benefits for men to get married, right? And then he, you know, like, for instance, I said...
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Remember I said, yeah. I said, like, you can live 7 to 10 years longer. And he's like, yeah, but that's no good if you're senile. It's like, what the hell are you saying? It's still 7 to 10. Not everyone's senile.
If you have a good wife and you're senile or you're Alzheimer's, your good wife's going to take care of you in those 7 to 10 years of forgetfulness.
Stefan, I have a quick question about this, like, sort of conversation. Like, whenever it comes to, like, marriage or relationships, it's like, I find that, like, a lot of people in those topics are, like, incels who it's like, they can't even find someone to get married to. So it's like, you're trying to persuade them on something that they can't even relate on.
Well, okay. Laugh. No, see, but I view it, rightly or wrongly, I view it as a more fluid situation. So there are people, of course, that you can't change. There are people who already agree with you when you focus on whatever percentage of people who are undecided or who might change. Now, I think that there are some guys out there who are nervous about their sexual market value and afraid of rejection and a wide variety of things. And they face a fork in the road. So they can come to me where I say, you know, just keep practicing and you can get there and all that kind of good stuff. And don't be too scared. Hang on. I'm right in the middle of saying something, bro. So that's one fork in the road. The other fork is, you know, women are evil and the system is going to crush you and divorce, rape. And they just like, then they just, thank goodness, I don't have to take on this challenge because the system is going to destroy me. I mean, the same thing, of course, happens to, you know, if you talked about minorities and so on, and you say, well, the system is crushing you and there's so much racism and sexism and for women. And right. It's just a way of helping people to believe that their avoidance of necessary challenges is somehow a wise accommodation to a brutal reality. So I think that there's a lot of sin that's going on around young men these days. Some of it, of course, is institutional. Some of it's government. Most of it's government. But some of it is these influencers who are just feeding into all of this fear and anxiety and really stripping these guys and saying, well, you don't have irrational fears that you can overcome. It's realistic, man. All women are terrible. And, you know, the government will crush you and the family courts will destroy you. And it's like, bro, that's really harsh. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how people live with putting that kind of stuff into people's heads.
I feel like the younger generation lacks examples of failure. So when I was in high school and stuff, and we'd like watch our friends go up and approach girls and just get humiliated, failure after failure. We've had girls just as a joke call security on people and have them executed from malls. Like these things were common occurrences.
Have them what from malls?
Oh, so we'd be in the mall. But this story, we had a friend.
No, I just didn't hear the word. Did you say executed from malls?
They chopped off his head. No, they like kicked out. I probably used the wrong word. Kicked out from the mall, right?
Okay, got it.
They thought it would be fun. Expelled. Right? Expelled.
Okay, not executed.
So I think the young generation lacks the exposure to these kinds of failures. So it's like they see it on the internet and they're just like, ah, fuck that.
I'm going to be honest with you. Like, no, that's not the case. Like, I used to be an incel. I've been single for like 8 years and like, I'm not an incel anymore. Cause like, I know how to find hoes, but it's like,
okay, please don't call them hoes. What are you doing, man? Come on. Come on. What are you doing? What are you doing?
You got 99 hoes? Problems, but,
Come on. What are you, little Nash X here? Like what's with the hoes thing? You're calling women whores?
Like, it's honestly safer, like, it feels safer to ask a hoe how much for your time than it does to, like...
Oh, you're talking about literal prostitutes.
Yes, but it's safer to ask a hoe how much for your time.
But you're still an incel if you're paying for sex?
Yeah, I'm not an incel anymore, but I used to be.
Oh, so you used to pay for sex, but now you don't?
No, I mean, I used to be an incel before I figured out how to do that.
What do you mean you figured out how to do it?
How? You just find, like, a number... On like certain
websites. you just go and pay for sex. That's not like a figuring out. You haven't solved the problem.
It's like where you find them is like a different store. It's like, all right, I mean, sure, you could hang out outside of hotels to find hoes.
Okay, I'm not having this conversation, bro. I'm not having this conversation about how how to find prostitutes. Like that's not what this show is about. And
all right, but like there are certain websites where you find numbers.
Okay, but what did I just say, bro?
I'm just saying like it's safer to do that.
No, shut up.
Than it is to like
shut up. No. Okay. Just stop talking. This is a troll or some nonsense like that. So anyway, Listen, I do appreciate everyone's time tonight. I'm going to stop here. And I really do. I did have a fantastic time talking. Even the last guy was kind of fascinating in his own kind of way. So I appreciate everyone. Of course, if you're listening to this later, you can, of course, join me on X at Stefan Molyneux, StefanMolyneux. And of course, if you could help support the show at freedomain.com/donate, I'd hugely appreciate it. Have yourself a glorious evening, everybody. It's so much love from up here in the headquarters of philosophy to everyone out there in the world. Take care, everyone. Have a great night. Bye.
Have a good night.
Good night.